Call to order this meeting of the Ways and Means Committee. A quorum is present. Representative Scott, would you like to move the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the minutes of April 1st, 2025.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Moves the minutes from April 1st, 2025. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, just a brief change to our agenda for today. We are going to postpone consideration of House File 2130 till a later meeting. There's still a little work being done on that bill, so we will not be taking that bill up today. We will begin there then with House File 3006, Chair Mohler's bill. And as the chair makes her way to the front, move House File 3006 be placed on the general register. Chair Mohler, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Torkelson, and members of the committee. House File 3006 is the DOC's deficiency request in the amount of about $9 million. And for those of you who aren't familiar with how things work in Department of Corrections, it's my understanding that the bargaining doesn't quite align with our budgeting cycle here in the legislature, so this isn't all that uncommon for this to happen, which is frustrating for us as chairs and members of the committee, but nevertheless, that is what happens. And so this deficiency request covers funding for mostly for the correction officers. It's for the agency to be able to meet their payments in June. So it's really important that we get this done and get this done quickly. And one reason for this number, too, is the agency used to be very understaffed. I think we'd all have been hearing about issues with having difficulty recruiting and retaining corrections officers, and I'm happy to report that they are now mostly fully staffed. I think it's over 97%, so that's good news. But it also contributes to this number that's in front of us today. And so just want to say thank you for allowing this bill to move as a standalone. That was part of the agreement, and for the ability to present this in a timely fashion. And with that, I know the commissioner is here for any questions that I'm not available to answer.
And we will take up questions just for members' knowledge. The bill, as Chair Mohler indicated, is part of the House budget agreement, and the money is allocated from the other bill's target, not the public safety target. Representative Akin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Mohler. Appreciate the hard work on the bill. And I just wanted to ask if somebody from the Department of Corrections might be here to help explain if this, if these costs would incorporate the anticipated additional costs for the return to work order.
And I see that Commissioner Chanel has made his way to the front. So, Commissioner, if you could state your name for the record and then answer the question.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Paul Chanel, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Corrections. This funding really is about the operational impact for the remainder of this fiscal year. And we do not anticipate, our agency does not have significant numbers of people who are working, teleworking, because of the nature of our business. So we do not anticipate to see any pronounced increased costs related to that.
Okay.
Representative Akin.
Thank you. So if there are, but you do anticipate some to be coming back that are currently working virtually, so their return to, so what I'm hearing you say is that you don't think there will be additional costs for their returning to the office?
Commissioner Schnell.
For returning to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we do not believe that, you know, we will have significant impacts around that. We have space that is available, and most of those people are working in administrative functions, not direct client service.
Thank you.
Any further discussion to the bill? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, the top of page 3, the inmate phone calls, $3.1 million each year. Is provided is to provide voice communication services. Has that always been the case? Have we always funded that?
And I'll put the question to Chair Mohler. This is in a part of existing law, so not a change item in the bill. But Chair Mohler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Scott, for that question. Yeah, this is not being changed in the bill. That was something that we did in 2023, I believe. It is a topic of discussion in the Public Safety Committee. It's not in this bill. And I did neglect to mention there are some other things that are in this bill that are moving funding around from other sources, because if my understanding is if we didn't do that, the deficiency would be $19 million instead of $9 million. So this is a great, great question, great topic for discussion. It's not part of this bill.
Chair Scott.
Thank you for that answer. We'll continue to watch that, I guess.
All right. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thanks for being here today. I think my question is kind of revolving around the negotiating part of this. It seems to be getting us in the situation once again. It sounds like the last band even we had the same issue. Along with this, then, I want to know this, you know, over the years, collective bargaining has been working hard to give the benefits to the state employees. Yet coming is paid family medical leave. What is the expected cost to the state that will kind of compound this issue going forward? Do you have that baked into future plans of that, Commissioner? What does that look like, this cost to Department of Corrections?
Commissioner Schnell.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we, you know, paid family leave has been something that, you know, from at least a limited basis by comparison, has been something that the state has been using. And so we have factored in much of that into our planning. It does not have impact, you know, this fiscal year that you know, in terms of any changes that are forthcoming relative to paid family leave. So right now, this funding really is about, you know, I think historically we have used vacancies to manage our budget and address these issues. And to your point that around the bargaining process, I know for a long time we've had these discussions because the Department of Corrections has historically come in for, I believe, decades, bringing forward requests for supplemental budget stuff based upon bargaining, which happened after the setting of the budget, which I understand the frustrations from the standpoint of the committees. And we certainly would love to see, you know, the ability to be able to the plan for this, as opposed to either having to use vacancies, and historically we've had them, now being staffed at 99%, which is unprecedented in at least the last decade. So I think, you know, this is a good problem, yet I understand completely the challenges it presents to policymakers.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, and you're right. That is good news that we're finding some better vacancy fills in our corrections facilities. But this is a real cost that has been churning for a while. This is a new cost coming out to the taxpayers here in 2026 if we don't make some major changes, or at least some understandings of what it's going to cost to a lot of these state employees that have a lot of these benefits already. So again, it's going to be a new cost to them as well as to the state. I hope that we get real serious about talking about those important items, because again, this is we're not getting our arms around the corrections, really the corrections budget that we're facing today. So I hope that we can get to that. So appreciate your input. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Schnell, for being here today. I'm wondering if you could just briefly let us know the misalignment between the state employee contracts when they settle and how it affects your budget. And if you have a suggestion of changing, I'd listen to that too.
Commissioner Schnell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burke, thank you. We've had this conversation for a number of years, and I think, you know, the way the bargaining has traditionally occurred is bargaining, for instance, would be about to begin right now for you know, the next contract. And that contract, the current contract, would end on June 30th of this year. And so procedurally, what ends up happening is we're behind. Bargaining is going to take place after the legislature sets a budget. And in an agency like ours that's 97% general fund funded and doesn't have other funding streams, obviously the impact on bargaining has pronounced implications for our budget. And so that's the reason why I think as an agency, the Department of Corrections, again, because we're so reliant on general fund, has typically come back during what would be non-budget years for supplemental budget ask. We have had some conversations this has been, as I understand it, long standing practice in terms of the bargaining schedule and pattern. And we have had some discussions about what that could look like, but it's going to take a flip of just how we get that done in terms of changing that up. But this has been long standing practice in terms of when bargaining has happened relative to budget setting.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the people smarter than me in this room, I think this is a huge problem, and it's not just affecting DOC, but it affects other state agencies as well, that there's a tremendous misalignment between when the contracts settle and when we do our budgets. And so that would be something we could tackle, I would hope, at some point, because this isn't a problem that's exclusive to DOC. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. If I get my microphone to cooperate. Starting on line 5.29, going all the way down through 6.24, housing initiatives that you have in the bill, you've got some funding changes. Can you tell me, is this a function of more people being released and needing housing on the way out, or what's the genesis for this? And secondary to that is, where are they being placed when they come out? What housing organization is managing that? Because I'm very interested. Our housing chairs here might be very interesting to the two of us as to what is this increase that we're looking at.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the question. And my understanding is this is just a shifting of funding. So I can turn it over to the commissioner for more specific answers to those questions, but all right, I'm seeing a thumbs up for that.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, so this particular provision really is about the shifting of some of those funds, but the basis or the reason for the funding initially was really focused on trying to make sure that we were not releasing people who came up upon their release date homeless. As you know, oftentimes, many times people come out and they do not have housing, and there was appropriation dollars for some of that. We implemented much of that, but not all of that. And so that's really what was reflected here.
Representative Nash. Representative Gmaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Mueller, as well. Kind of along the same lines, I was wondering if you could help us understand a little bit more why you selected the shifts you did from a couple of the programs. My understanding is it's some of the educational programming, some of the tribal nations post-release supervision programming, and of course the housing initiatives, as we just talked about, but why those areas were selected for shifts or reductions.
Commissioner Chanel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. It's about selection. Some of this was just is the implementation time. For instance, the tribal supervision funding, working with the tribes has been, this was brand new, and it was the first time that this was in place. One of the requirements for that funding was that the tribes, just like any county across the state, would work together with an advisory group to develop that. And because this was not established, as it is in the counties where these advisory groups had take place in order to identify how those resources get used, implementation was delayed, which is why that those resources became available. On the education side, it was really, we wanted to take full advantage of federal Pell funding. And so it's where we could use federal Pell funding, we really relied on that, and these resources were, as a result, less needed. And so we used a large amount of this was a big one-time funding. And so we were able to purchase some infrastructure for educational technology that served both the basic adult education students within the DOC and those pursuing other types of educational programming, but we really wanted to focus on using federal Pell dollars to the fullest extent possible.
Representative Bajra?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Schnell, for that answer. I guess my last question, especially on the work with the tribal nations, just wanting to get a better sense, though, is before deciding to shift this funding around, what were their consultations? Is there plans in the works to be able to try to get that program back again, or what are kind of the resources that would be available for that?
Commissioner Schnell.
Chair, Representative, it's a great question. We have had regular consultations with the tribes, because it was new, but this is ongoing funding. And so I want to be clear that those efforts and many of those tribes have initiated their plans and are finalizing those. There's also some provisions in the bill where we're just doing some changes in terms of how we administer those, working with the Public Safety Committee on that. That stuff, which will make it a lot easier for us to do, to get those resources out in a manner very similar to what happens with the counties across the state. So that's underway and will continue. These resources were simply made available because of the planning efforts that the tribes have been doing, and so those dollars were unspent and then available to be used for this purpose.
Representative Clyburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, 99% fulfillment rate is awesome. And I would think that when you also have this 99% rate, that it would also be reducing overtime. Is that correct?
Commissioner Schnell.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. It does reduce overtime. We have seen a significant reduction in overtime. And one of the concerns of the committee the chairs of the Public Safety and Judiciary Committees has been, the amount of overtime that we've spent, number one, and in particular the amount of forced overtime where we force people to stay on. That has gone down to really is negligible. We still do have overtime, and one of the things that's driving that is the number of medical delegations. As we see our population age and be sicker, we spend more time at hospitals and clinics for specialty care, and that's oftentimes what's driving our overtime costs.
Okay. Representative Clyburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I just want to thank you for always keeping humans front and center of your work, whether it's your staff or the residents of our facilities in Minnesota, but also remembering that most of the incarcerated individuals do return to community, and to help them lower recidivism rates and to make sure that public safety is upheld. I just want to commend you for that work in that area. Thank you.
Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner Snell, it's been pretty well worked out here, but the point is we had about $10 million that was extra in the fund that we were able to move around and cover this. So important to realize that obviously we've got to make even bigger cuts coming forward or going forward. This is a Band-Aid on a program. I believe our projected shortfall is about $90 million for the next biennium that we need to make up. I think we need to go into that budget too and do some serious cutting, but in the meantime, I think we need to cover payroll, and I support Chair Mueller's on this going forward. I think we need to do more work. Thank you.
And then we'll give closing comments to Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the members of the committee for a great discussion. And I do want to just note again, staffing levels at 99%. I think I understated that before, so appreciate that. And I'm happy to continue discussions in the interim about the timing and how these things work out and create these deficiency problems. I think that's an excellent suggestion to continue to look into that. Thanks to Chair Novotny for your work on this, and also just recognizing that this bill ensures the sustained, safe, and efficient operation of our prisons and the continuance of services that are critical to rehabilitation of incarcerated individuals. And with that, I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Chair Mueller renews her motion that House File 3006 be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and House File 3006 is placed on the General Register. The next item on our agenda is House File 1290 from Representative Perryman. I will move House File 1290 be placed on the General Register. Representative Perryman, when you are situated, you may describe your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. HF 1290 is a very straightforward and a bipartisan bill. What it does is it improves public awareness and access to automatic external defibrillators in qualifying locations. So it's a very straightforward bill. Signage along the roadway with MnDOT approval. But I'd like to speak just to what, not just the what, but the who. It is, I can tell you all the stats there are about the first 4 minutes once someone has a heart defibrillation going on, that those 4 minutes are key. This signage will make it areas awareness and easy to access should they be on the roadway. The other point of this is the cabinets. The AEDs, cabinets, are paid for by individuals. Schools, restaurants, they are paying for them themselves. So the signage at this point, I know there's a fiscal note in there for signage for each location at $4,000, but I'd like to explain that that cost is very high compared to what the company that does this work, which in Minnesota, Advocates for Health, and also the person that is getting the sign put up for where the cabinet is located is paid by the individual who has the AED on their location. So Minnesotans believe in this AED can save lives so much that they are willing to put their own money into it, and now we're asking to just unify the signage and unify MnDOT to give approval where the signage will go. And again, too, the signage could look like this, which is an existing sign already, and they just put the AED sign onto the post or the legs of the sign, or there could be a whole other standalone sign that would cost a little bit more. But again, the individual who has the cabinet pays for the signage. They believe in this will save lives. It's across all Minnesota. There's over 300 cabinets that Advocates for Health, who I am working with on this bill, has put up across the whole state of Minnesota. They have now moved into South Dakota. They have moved into Iowa, and they are moving into Florida as we speak. So it's a wave that's going to save lives. It's a good bill. It's bipartisan. And again, it's maybe a what bill, but it's the who that's behind this bill and who the lives will be saved.
Discussion to the bill. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I think this is a great idea, but I have a question for you. So once the signs are placed on the highway, what happens? I mean, because time is of the essence. So what happens if the entity that said they would have the AED no longer supports the AED, or the AED is removed by, let's say, vandalism or something? Is there a plan to ensure that the AEDs are actually where the highway signs say they are?
Representative Perryman.
Chair, Representative, yes, there is a responsibility to the individual who is maintaining the cabinet. They also can employ Advocates for Health who will do the monthly maintenance as well. There's many options, but the responsibility will always be on the individual who has it, might be a school or a restaurant. And this is where MnDOT will come into play as well. MnDOT may, we're not mandating it, but they may update the Minnesota manual on the uniform traffic control devices to integrate these signs into the official roadway guidance. So it would be there. There's also an application that you can go on your phone and you'll be able to find these places that marry up with the signs as well. But all the good maintenance of the sign itself, and if the AED is taken away from the restaurant, they are responsible to take the sign down as well. So it's a constant evolving responsibility with the individual who has the cabinet.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Perryman. So I hear you say that if this sponsor of the AED no longer wants to sponsor the AED, they would be responsible for the cost incurred by MnDOT to remove the sign. Is that correct?
Chair? Representative Perryman.
Representative, yes, that is accurate.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry, Representative Perryman, usually I watch all of the hearings before the bill gets here, so I don't have that many questions, but I did not get a chance to watch yours. My quick question is, so is this a defibrillator in a box that's external to the public? So if that restaurant's closed or the school's closed, people aren't steered there and then not have that AED? And then is there an address on the AED box? So if they're calling 911, they can give directions to that where they're at, because they're going to need 911 there still as well.
Representative Perryman.
Chair, Representative, everything you just said is accurate. What the AEDs are to be located outside establishments, easy access. Part of the cabinet is signage that tells you how to work it, how to maintain it. And yes, there is a 911 number, and it also lists the closest hospital. That's all on this signage, and it's all one kit with the cabinet.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Perryman, is there also the address of where that AED is located so 911 knows where to go?
Representative Perryman.
Chair, that is the listing that would be on the web, that application the app I talked about, and yes, there's also address associated to the cabinets.
Thank you.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Perryman, just make sure I got this straight. What would be the cost to a business that wanted to sponsor the box and put up the signage?
Representative Perryman.
Representative, the cost of the signage of the bill that we're speaking today would be to the person that has the cabinet, and it can range from $550 to, depending if it's a standalone. I have a price sheet, a real actual price sheet that the Advocates for Health puts these cabinets up. And so the signage would always be paid by the individual putting the cabinet up, but it can range from $550 to the whole cabinet. I have a cost here. If they get the cabinet, signage, and everything, it's $6,850. So it can vary a lot, and it's up to the individual.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Perryman, I've got the FISCO note. It mentions $4,040 per defibrillator location. Is that your understanding of what the state will charge every business for doing this?
Representative
Perryman. Chair, Representative, that was the initial stage of pricing that we did get from for our fiscal note. However, doing my own homework and doing some more homework, it's not going to be that much money. So, yes, there is a fiscal note of $4,040, but it's not very, or I will just say it's not accurate.
Representative Novotny.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Perryman, I would want to get that in writing for the DOT. And I guess I'm just speaking and overall reading this fantasy of what the cost would putting the sign up. I can't think of any other way to describe this estimate from the DOT other than a fantasy. The state of Minnesota is already paying every one of these bills already. They're out every day fixing, repairing, replacing signs every day. And to look at this, I think the DOT person that put this together should be ashamed. If we've got a business that wants to do this life-saving contribution to the committee and let people or the community and let people know that this is out there and this is available and maybe it could save a life, and then we're going to scalp that business. And I can't think of any other way to describe this estimate other than scalping. The DOT should be ashamed. Thank you.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the bill author for bringing this up. Just interestingly enough, and
Representative Novotny, thank you as well. On my drive in again, I noticed all the cute little things that are up and all the time spent making wonderful, cute things to get our attention, and yet the DOT can't just simply allow for these. My question, or without the cost incurred, my question is this. If these signs aren't there, how do people know about these?
Representative Perryman.
Chair, Representative, they don't, unless you have the actual app on your phone, and there is an app, and I'd have to pull out the name, but there is an app that'll tell you where all these are at, but you will just, if you're having the symptom, you will just pull off and hope for the best. Instead of seeing a sign that, as I said earlier, I don't think this is worth $4,000, as Rep. Novotny was pointing out, but you don't know where they are unless there is signage.
Representative Crecia.
So I think you just summed it up there. So the DOT's response with their fiscal notice, pull off to the side and hope for the best. Thank you. No further questions.
And we'll give closing comments to Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Again, there's many stats that I could go on with, and usually my testifiers do that. But I just want to bring out that the what is very simple. It's a statute with MnDOT and putting in the manual, standardizing what the signs look like, all the standardization. That's the what. But really the who is what this is really about, the who. As Representative Crecia said, if you are in dire need of something going on, especially at schools, restaurants, and you need that help right away, this is the way to save lives. And it's effective and will be effective across all of Minnesota, not just my area, but way up north. These boxes and these signs are going up everywhere, and I think it's a wonderful attribute that we can work with MnDOT.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. I'll renew my motion that House File 1290 be placed in the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and House File 1290 is placed on the General Register. And I believe that concludes our business for today, so the meeting is adjourned.